Working the Man. Sorry. Working the Man Strong Podcast is your host, Clint Locklear. You're going to hear some background noise, I have no doubt. I'm going down the interstate. I'm trying to get home from a convention that I just came from. So you'll probably hear the little lady on my ways start talking. But hopefully we can all ignore that and try to just get to the message of what the show is. And I want to talk about two different subjects. One is having revenue streams and a couple of things to think about. And the other is understanding the difference between show muscles and go muscles and why that's important. So before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They got a full line of trapping supplies. They make copper trap tags, which you can use for all kinds of stuff. Alan, and actually his employee's name is Alan. So Alan and Alan are just some of the best people I've ever dealt with. And they have such a following of people that get to know them for the simple fact, I think Alan would cut his left hand off before he thought that somebody else thought, even if they're wrong, that somehow he did something that was dishonest. And that's the type people that you want to work with. Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. All right. I'm a huge component that men need to have revenue streams. For years, I've talked about this in different platforms, different reasons. And one of the main reasons is if you only have one income stream, you're super just insanely at high risk. If you only have one revenue stream, and that's the way that you think that it should be, because that's the way that it was, you know, back in the 80s, where you get out of school, you get a job, you die, and hopefully before that you get to play around because you're retired. And companies used to at least give the illusion of they actually cared about the employee more than just a cog in the wheel. And it went both ways. Most people would want to find a job, and if it was a decent paying job, they would hope to retire there, you know, when they're 60 or 65. So that part of the world used to be, and it's not today. And that is an absolute fact. People move around about every 3 to 5 years now on average. There's not very much loyalty from companies, and there's no loyalty from employees. Since no one's being loyal, having one income stream is even riskier. I want you to think of this kind of like a tree. If you've got one root and you get a big wind that comes, the only thing that is saving you from that wind is the one root. If the tree gets pushed on hard enough by the wind, it's gonna collapse and fall over. But if you look at how trees are actually made, because nature does a pretty good job of alleviating risk, when that wind pushes against that tree, it's got roots that go in all directions. So even if something tragic happens, like a dozer gets too close and it whacks a couple of the roots off of the tree, there's still plenty of roots involved to be able to let the tree survive. But if you just have one income stream, one thing can actually turn your whole life upside down. And as men, I think part of our job is not to let that happen. It's on us to be more proficient in how we conduct our life as far as money goes. Sometimes, yeah, I mean, if you're a doctor or you're a lawyer or something, I would still recommend having a side hustle, even if you're making 200 grand a year. Just for the simple fact, if something happens to that, the way people get canceled today, you can get sued, all this stuff, and all of a sudden you have no income coming in, it's going to be a lot more stressful than if you have different side hustles that you can try to amp up when the time has come. So when I'm talking about these, most people, when I talk to them, there's a couple of factors that keep coming up and up and up. One is, well, what should I do? Well, no one can tell you what you should do. You have to figure out what you should do. I can't tell you what your side hustle should be for the simple fact I don't know you that well. Even if you're a close friend, there could be some things that you do with skills that you have or different parts that you would like to try that I have no idea. So asking somebody what you should do, for one, is a non-starter if you're going to be realistic about the world that we live in. I don't know you. It does not have to have anything to do with what you do for your main living. It doesn't. You could be a doctor that starts a guide service for striper and a catfish guide service, and you get really good at bow fishing, and you could start guiding for that at the same time. Those two don't have anything to do together, and I think you're actually better if they don't. So when you're looking at revenue streams, what is it that you want to do? Now, this is where you're going to have to do what you think is best and not what your friends think is best. Not what your family always think is best. Not what your parents think is best. Because most people are very risk averse when it comes to revenue streams. All they can focus on is if it doesn't work. That's all they see. And if you don't risk much, you don't gain much. If you don't take some chances, and if you take chances, you're going to lose some of the time. And who cares? Because I can tell you, anybody that doesn't lose is boring. And they're probably not very happy because they stay in a lane which is very secure, and the rewards from that mentally are not very high. Men need to have combat. Men need to have something to strive for. That's in a man's DNA. We're losing that. When you start a revenue stream, the chemical parts of your body are going to feel just like you're going into combat. But unlike going into combat, one mistake doesn't get you killed. But people look at the revenue streams just like that. One mistake and they're going to get killed. The other thing is they look around the landscape. And we live in the information age, which there's so much content out here right now. And there's so much stuff going on and so much access to quote experts, and I'm not claiming to be one, that you think that someone can tell you how to run your revenue stream. Now, there's basic principles. You need to charge more than it costs or you're not actually making income. That's pretty basic, and that's not going to change. But people will give you formulas. Some of them are low-key, some of them are high-key, where you got to, you know, try to think about you're like being a Navy SEAL or something because you open up a lawn care business. It's ridiculous. Gary Vee, which I suggest you look him up. If you don't know who he is, look some of his stuff up on YouTube and just watch about an hour of it. He's brilliant at how he brings these points out that I'm trying to get someone to understand. But nobody knows exactly what's going to happen when you start a revenue stream. Experts don't know, you don't know, potential customers don't know, nobody knows. So it's kind of like you're looking at this revenue stream, and I want you to picture that you're on the edge of a moving small river in Africa. you're standing on the edge. And on the other edge is a revenue stream that you can do, that you want to do, that you have the ability to do, but you're not quite sure if you can do it. So what you're going to have to do is wade off into that water. And when you first start, you're going to be about ankle deep. You're going to be testing the water. Is it cold? Is it moving too fast? Do you know how to swim? And then you're going to look up and down the bank and you're going to go, holy crap, there's possible alligators in here. If I go in too deep, an alligator could get me. And you sit there and you contemplate. And you let the fear drive the way that you're thinking. Most people will not go across that little river. If there's two alligators and there's 100 people trying to cross the river, it's a pretty low percentage it's going to be you. And when you actually take into consideration that alligators don't eat every day, it gets lower. Maybe you could do a distraction. Maybe you could feed the alligators before you go into the water to take away a little bit of that risk. Maybe you can build a boat, get in a canoe, have someone throw a rope across the river, tie it to your waist, and have someone just take off in a vehicle, and the alligators, the crocodiles, are not going to have very good a chance to get you. But you're going to have to enter that water, and you know there's possible alligators. But the fear of the alligator is way worse than the reality of you getting ate. I've been all over swamps in Louisiana and Mississippi. I've been around a lot of alligators, and I've never been once close to getting bit. They're there. That don't mean they're going to bite you. And luckily, if the alligator does get you, this is a metaphor, and you're really not going to die. It can be a disappointment, but you're not going to die. And as you get further down in this water, you're going to start feeling things on the bottom. And you know what that is? That's the bones of people who tried to do revenue streams and failed. So you're going to have to step over the bones and the skulls to get to the other side of this water. Because there is no doubt that a high percentage of people that try to start a business don't make it. It's not, for the most part, that it's so hard to run a business that you can't do that. So when you hear stuff like 80% of small businesses fail, 80% of those small businesses, one, didn't learn anything about business before they started. They didn't know about money because they never took the time to learn about it. They take advice from people who are not successful in business, which always turns up bad because they don't know, they just think they do, or family members. And most people do what they think society wants them to do. And because of that single reason, they pick a bad choice on what their new business or revenue stream is. There is danger there. I'm not going to pretend like there's not. You need to be aware of it. But when you're aware of it, now you can strategize for it, which a lot of people don't do. Yet you have people a lot of times that are overly cautious and never do anything. But then you have people that are think that they're going to be the exception because that's the way all our movies are made. You know, I mean, that's the way books are written. The lone hero comes out at the end highly successful and everybody admires his courage and all that type stuff. People like that go in the water right next to the alligator when hadn't fed in 3 weeks because they think they're so special. they get eight. But a majority of people don't really do what they want to do, because they do what other people thinks they should do based off of something else that they do. Like a lawyer starting a fishing guide service is wonky. You should do something in law, not necessarily. That same lawyer could start a welding business. Same lawyer could start some type of wine business. All kind of different things that has nothing to do with what his law degree is. So when you're thinking about your revenue stream, you need to be super honest with yourself about what it is that you would like to do. And you can't, and most times you don't need to even speak this to another human being. Because most humans, when they hear something that's not normal or average, what do? They're going to start putting it down. And they can crush you with the intent of, quote, helping you. And a lot of people, when they get around people that decide to change, they will fight and scream to keep you at the same level, because down deep they know they're not doing what they should do, and it absolutely insults them and hurts their feelings when people start bettering themselves. So think about this when you're thinking about your revenue stream. What is it that you really want to do? Because you can find a way today to make money on almost anything. It's crazy with technology what happens today when someone does what they should be doing. But as a grown man, you've got to have the courage to step in that water. Be smart about it, yes. Don't be foolish. Don't go out and get second loans and third loans on your house to do it. Start small, build up income, build up customers, figure things out, and you'll probably be okay. I've started several businesses through my life, and I've never borrowed a penny. I've never once went to borrow money from a bank on a business one time, ever. It's slower, but it's safer. And it takes a lot of the anxiety away from you if you do that. But there's nothing wrong with having three or four little side businesses. Make a couple thousand here, make 10,000 there, make 500 here, learn about all of them. And you may find out 10 years from now, none of them are really right for you anyway. But look at all you've learned. Look at what you've learned. So when the right thing does show up, which most of the time it shows up in ways that you never thought, roll with it. Because you'll know it. You may not know quite how to do it, but you'll know it. And then that's where it comes in that you start strategizing. You start learning. You start putting that learning to application. Because learning without application is nothing but mental masturbation. But that's where most people stay when it comes to their revenue streams. So just keep that in mind. Go in that water. Understand there's alligators. Understand that there's things out there that you can't control, and there's been people before you that's failed, but that does not mean that you're going to. The last part on this revenue stream is you don't do what everybody else is doing, even if there's more than one revenue people doing this same type of idea. If you do, you're always going to be behind. Always. I see this in the animal sense industry all the time. I am never concerned about competition that copies. Never. They can be frustrating. I don't want to be buddies with them because that's just not what I want to deal with. But I'm not concerned with them. See, I know what it costs for me to do business. And I know what I have to charge to make a minimum of profit so it's worth my time. I'm not looking around at other businesses to try to go, oh, they're selling that, I can do that too. No, you're always going to be second fiddle when you do that. You're always going to struggle, and you're not going to get very far. Do not do that. You do you. You do your business. Let them follow you. Because if they're following you, they're never going to be able to get ahead of you. I was just talking to a gentleman that has a product. There's plenty of people that also make this product. His product, he feels confident enough that he could put a 5-year warranty on this and hardly ever see a return. The other people that also make this product sell it in the $12 to $15 range, and it causes a lot of frustration to people that use it. He uses a very expensive type of material that's put together in a very technology-based way. So for him, and when I was talking to him, you could tell there was a struggle going on. Everybody else is selling theirs for $12, $15. Just in material and to get this stuff heat treated the way that it is, he's at $28. I told him to charge $60. Everybody else is selling at $12. See, most people that are followers look at that and go, well, no one's going to buy yours because it's more expensive. And that's true. That's not true, but it is true. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to buy the cheap. And there's going to be a lot of people that want quality. And there's going to be a number in between that's going to realize, I can buy the cheap, but it's actually costing me more per year than it is to buy this one that lasts 5 years. His value to the customer is way more than the cheap. And he was trying to base his price off of people that do it on the cheap with cheap material that causes frustration. So when we talked about numbers a little bit more, he was so worried about that, he was almost going to be doing this for nothing when it was all said and done. And me and a friend were talking to him going, don't do that. Why are you going to spend your energy on something that you're really not going to make any money from? People do it every day. Do not be a follower. Look at the landscape. Find out what part of this landscape you want to be part of. Keep breaking that down until you find something that can set you apart from the followers. Don't base your prices off of them. Because people seem to think if it's a widget, price is the main concern, and it's not. We see this every day in what people buy in cars. On this trip, I've seen several smart cars. I've seen Geo Metro cars. I've seen stuff that looks like it's made out of, you know, Coke cans. It's got a gerbil for a motor. It's cheap. And the price tag is cheap. And then I'll see a C8 Corvette. And a C8 Corvette, by the time that you actually get halfway what you want on there, it's about $120,000. I can go buy a car for $15,000. Just a regular, generic, run-of-the-mill, not going to last very long, not fun to drive, don't know how dependable it is, car for $15,000. Now, the Vette, by the time you get the color you want, you get the spoilers you want, you get the mods you want. I'm not talking about getting crazy. I'm just talking about it, because I looked into getting one. It was going to be about $120,000. I didn't buy one. But for you to order a C8 Corvette right now, you're on a long waiting list. Driving down to the dealership and picking one up, that's not how that works, because they can't keep up with production on a $120,000 car. How many farmers do you see trying to pull stuff around their farm in little Nissan Toyota trucks? Not very many. You can probably get those for $35,000. That might be off $5,000 one way or the other. No, they're driving $75,000 Duramaxes and Dodges. The value to that farmer is way more than just the cost. And you have to come with terms to this. Even if you're a very frugal, or shall I say cheap, person, that doesn't mean the rest of the world is just like you. Because if it was, you'd be able to go down to the showroom and pick up a C8 Vette, because there'd be 12 on the lot, and there's not. Don't be a follower. You're going to have to get in the water and do you, and watch what happens. Be true to what you know you need to be doing. And I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk just a little bit about weightlifting, getting in shape. At this convention, I was amazed, because it had nothing to do with fitness. Over half the people I talked to were talking about fitness. All of them were close to my age or older. I'm 52. A lot of guys were like, I'm doing what I can. I've had back surgery, I've had neck surgery, I've got bad hips, I've got bad knees. So I can't do everything that I wanted to do. But they're doing something. And another thing that just, I'm seeing this more clearly as time goes on. Weightlifting when you're 20 is fun. Your buddies, you know, brag on you a little bit. You think the girls are going to pay attention. It's not. They're looking for security, not abs. But you think so at 25 years old. But weightlifting as you get older almost becomes a necessary if you want to function in a daily way. The longer you wait, the more struggle it's going to be to get back to a baseline. Once you have a good baseline, 2 or 3 years of solid lifting, maintaining that is pretty easy. Scientifically, when you look at some of the stuff that's come out of Russia and China, which has the best weightlifting programs internationally, people that actually have PhDs that do nothing but study high-end athletes, it takes about 10% to maintain strength and muscle as it does to gain it. 100%. But if you don't gain a baseline, you're going to be like a whole lot of people I saw this weekend. That's either, they can be skinny, but they're brittle. You can just look at them. They're feeble. Or they can be really fat and brittle.
Watch out, vehicle on shoulder ahead.
Or they can lose some weight because they finally get on a diet and they're doing it by walking and calorie reduction. And then they're skinny fat. They lose a bunch of weight, but they still have a lot of fat on them. And they don't have any muscle tone whatsoever. And you can see that they struggle doing basic things. And if you talk to them about doing basic things, you can tell they don't want to even attempt it for the simple fact.
Watch out, vehicle on shoulder ahead.
That it's not easy because the shape that they're in. I've got a neighbor that's 80 that just started lifting weights. I'm really curious to see how this works. He's an engineer. He's looking at it through the eyes of an engineer. It'll be very interesting to see how he responds to that. But just in 3 weeks, my 80-year-old neighbor says he can already feel a difference as he functions through his normal day. The other observation that I've had, especially being on the road, because I look at like social media in the motel room at night and stuff like that. The difference of opinions about what's important can get very, very into the weeds. You've got bodybuilders that have to get down to 5% body fat. Most of them are taking a ton of steroids. They don't care about the weight. They don't care about being coordinated. They don't care about balance. They obviously don't care about tendons and ligaments so you don't get hurt, because anybody that takes a bunch of steroids, if you look at the research, you're way more susceptible to having tendon and ligament damage because your muscles outgrow those. And bodybuilders that are serious and been doing it for a long time have a high rate of injury if they're taking a lot of juice. But I see people on social media all the time. It doesn't matter how much you lift. And to a point, I agree with them. But what blows me away is the majority of people I actually hear say this are not competitive bodybuilders. See, bodybuilding is a sport. It's like a glorified pageant with really big dudes that get up in front of people and they pick who they think is the biggest and the most, has the best form, the way they look. It's all about the looks. If that's going to be your sport, knock yourself out. You're going to be better off doing that without all the steroids, of course, than being skinny, fat, or feeble and weak. But when I hear people that aren't competitive bodybuilders say that, it hits me in a wrong way, and I'm going to tell you why. What you don't want to do on the road is have someone that comes up next to you in a Challenger that's got this little logo on there that lets you know that it's a demon. Because it's pushing 1,000 freaking horsepower from the factory. Now, a lot of people aren't going to know that it's a demon because they're not car people. Or they may not see the little badges that are on there from the factory. But that car, in a drag situation, is not something most people want to go up against. Because you're going to need a crap ton of horsepower to overtake 1,000 horsepower. But see, lifting weights and not ever worried about what you're lifting, one, I think is a misnomer that the industry puts out because they know people don't want to work very hard. And two, it's a misnomer because you need to have strength to be able to function in life. You're going to be moving couches. You're going to be moving refrigerators. You're going to be picking up, you know, if you buy your beef, well, they're going to hand it to you in these great big totes. Helping your wife, planting a garden. Everything in life is easier when you're stronger. Everything. When you look at the routines of the world-class sprinters, they are the strongest humans that play track, except for the shot put and the guys that throw the, you know, the hammers and all that type stuff. But as far as running, sprinters are the most strong people. It's not that they're small, because sprinters aren't even small. They're strong. If you look at yourself in a realistic manner, I want you to think about something. If you had a demon challenger with 1,000 horsepower, or you've got a regular challenger with 450 horsepower, and you're going down the road and you start giving that thing gas to hit a certain speed, the one with 450 horsepower is going to be pushed a lot more than 1,000 horsepower to hit this certain speed. It's kind of like putting air conditioning units on your house. If you need a 3-ton to hit the bare requirements, and you put a 3-ton in there, it's going to be stressed all the time. Put a 4-ton in there, it can do what the 3-ton did, but it's not going to even break a sweat, because it's not having to push itself all the time. Stronger makes everything easier. Everything. From grilling, to having sex, to moving furniture. Everything. There's no downside to being stronger. There's a crap ton of downside to being weak. So, like these little smart cars I've seen, that's got like a 2 or 3 cylinder something, probably 100 horsepower. When I see these things in the mountains where I live, they can't even keep consistent speed up going up a hill. It causes mass traffic problems. Now, on flat ground, they're okay because everybody's going 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. Give them a little bit of struggle, and it's a huge struggle, and they actually fail at it to keep a speed. Now, 1,000 horsepower demon, or having 600 pounds of torque in a Duramax, it'll take a hill and not even know that it's on a hill. It doesn't stress. It's not close to its limits. You're not pushing it. See, that's what strong people just don't have to push themselves in everyday life. Where weak people are always at the red line. And they wonder why they get hurt. They go out and they shoot a deer. They got to drag it back. It takes them 3 days to recuperate. A strong person grabs the deer and just takes it back. Body's used to it. But you can take one of these little smart cars, which is the way I look at bodybuilding for real world reasons. You can take a smart car and you can go get the demon badges that's on those cars and put it on the smart car. Now, you really don't have 1,000 horsepower. Your car's going to strain going up a hill. A three-legged dog can probably beat you from 0 to 60. But you got the badges to look like your Dodge Demon. Who wants to be the smart car with badges that makes that you're trying to make people look at you and think that you got power. There's some tremendously strong bodybuilders, but that's not the way that things are being taught. And when I look at what a lot of people market to older people that are trying to get in shape, they're actually pushing them towards bodybuilding. It's all about the looks. It's not about the function. It's not going to really help them to keep their balance if they start to fall. It's not going to help them with their tendons and ligaments, really. It's not going to help them as much with bone density. They're not going to use as many calories if they're trying to use fat. But since everything today is so freaking superficial, you can have the cover of a guy that's in his 50s showing his abs, and people that don't know any better think that's strong and in shape. They think it. It's not real. See, bodybuilders don't look like bodybuilders year-round. Bodybuilders bulk. They put on a lot of fat with a lot of muscle with a lot of steroids.
Watch out, object on road ahead.
They only look like what people think they look like maybe 2 days out of the year, 2 weeks out of the year at the most. And they starve themselves with a reduced calorie for the muscle mass that they have. They have a tendency to pass out on stage because they don't drink any water. I mean, there's nothing healthy about being a competitive bodybuilder. And then they get all kind of weird little food dysmorphias. And after they do the show, they pretty much all go pig out. And they will gain 20 to 30 pounds in a week because they're so depleted. That's not healthy. I'm not saying to anybody out there that's listening to this that you need to be a world-class power lifter, because I would actually advise you against that. I think you should set some limits. You shouldn't be trying to squat 1,000 pounds. You shouldn't be trying to deadlift 800 pounds. But if you can honestly deadlift 405, 500, there's very few things in your life that you're not going to be able to handle. You do some mobility work. You do some tendon and ligament work. You build some muscle mass through some bodybuilding exercises. But you build strength. Strength may not look as pretty, but is that really why most people in their 50s, 60s, late 40s start actually lifting? No. They realize they're getting weaker. They realize it's a struggle to do anything. And then they get caught up into the superficial. And when the time comes that they need to use the muscle that they've grown, they build it in such a way that it doesn't even know how to coordinate together. So you can build muscle. I'm going to end with this. And I just want you to stew on this a little bit. You can build tremendous muscle with isolation exercises. Concentration curls, tricep extensions, flies for your chest, lateral raises and front raises for your shoulders. High rep trap exercises. High rep low weight back exercises. But when you train these individually all the time, they don't know how to work. When you talk to a power lifter, or when you're moving a couch upstairs,
watch
or you're helping
on shoulder ahead,
or you're helping your daughter take a refrigerator into her dorm room, you've got to be able to use all those muscles, and they need to know how to work together. Squatting, deadlifting, benching, maybe cleaning, overhead presses, back rows, good mornings. Because see, when a power lifter deadlifts, he's not a bunch of individual muscles. And when you move a refrigerator for your daughter, you're not individual muscles. You're one muscle. If you're good at deadlifting, you use everything from your toes to the bottom of your earlobes. It's one movement. It's one great big muscle exerting force. That's why compound movements are trained as movements and not so much purely for hypertrophy or just growing muscle. But when you go to the gym, and I talk to people that lift, it's almost like everybody is in this, they gotta have everything isolated on machines and cables. But when it comes time to actually produce work in the real world, out of the gym, they're not, their muscles are not coordinated to work together. And that's when you get hurt. But if you learn to train with compound movements with free weights, you've got the balance. The refrigerator's not balanced. You got to be able to use several muscles at one time, and you're not going to get that
vehicle on shoulder ahead
with just normal lifting. So think about what you're doing if you're going to be getting into weightlifting. What is your goal? Do you want to look like you're strong and you're really not? Or do you want to be strong and you can look like you're strong, but not in the same way that a bodybuilder does? What is your goal? Think it through and then strategize a plan for that. It is not going to hurt you to lift heavy-ish weight. It's not. Your doctor may not like it, but if the doctor had his choice, all of his patients would be in a padded cell with everything sterilized, and you would never do anything physical because there's a chance that you could get hurt. But see, we don't live in a padded room with perfect food in a sterile environment. We live in the real world. Either you're going to live for the real world or you're going to live for a fake one. So know what you're doing if you're going to go either way. But really think about what it is that your goals are so you make the right decision.